Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Duffel bags from Jesse Brown's are great for people packing up to go somewhere, but also for those that are staying close to home. How's that? Sizes from 40, 55, 70, and 100 liters from makers like Patagonia are all on hand at Jesse Brown's. Check us out at jessebrowns.com for that duffel, the black hole duffel, whether it be going on an airplane or being a modern-day footlocker for students, campers, and dorm rooms. Pick a size and color, all at jessebrowns.com. Hey, the Carolina Outdoors is now in session. We're glad that you're joining us as we come in each week to break down four different segments for your listening pleasure. And hopefully, somewhere along the way, you will be enticed to take on your own adventure in our Carolina Outdoors. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Barty from Jesse Brown's Outdoors. It's helping power this edition, this segment of the Carolina Outdoors, and we're going to get into talking a little bit about Trail Days. It's taking place May 18th through the 21st in Damascus, Virginia. Not even in the Carolinas, Damascus, Virginia. We're crossing the lines to talk about this Appalachian Trail City and this festival that's taking place. We're also going to talk about the Bryson City Fly Fishing Museum. We're going to have Alan Baker that's going to join us a little bit later on to talk about it. But in the meantime, on the Carolina Outdoors, I have a few announcements along the way that I would like to share. One of them is coming from Bill Jewett of the Carolina Fly Fishing Club. They've got an upcoming trip to Rosman, North Carolina. You can sign up for that on the Carolina Fly Fishing Club website or Facebook page. And for you fly tiers, in June 13th and the 20th, they have line and tying classes going on. One for North is at Bass Pro Shops starting at 6:30. One on the 20th for the South is at Cabela's starting at 6 o'clock. So again, June 9th through 11th, fishing the waters of the Southeastern Canceled trip to Rosman, North Carolina. Check it out at the CarolinaFlyFishingClub.org website. Hey, but wait, that's not all. Mecklenburg County Council says for all scouts to prepare for camp. They've got the Belk Scout Camp, Camp Grimes, the camping community is all getting ready for a very special 2023 summer camp experience. Check it out at the Mecklenburg County Council website, whether you're have Weebelows, Adventure Camps, Cub Scouts, or Boy Scouts, or the other scouting programs that are available through Mecklenburg County Council. Did you all see where Lake Norman was ranked in the national rankings for most beautiful lake? According to a new report by Insider, Lake Norman beat out Falls Lake, High Rock Lake, and even Lake Lure to be crowned the most beautiful freshwater lake in North Carolina. For South Carolina, the most beautiful was listed as Lake Norman. This, again, according to Insider, Lake Norman is the most beautiful lake in North Carolina, with Marion being the most beautiful lake in South Carolina. Lake Norman ranked next to Lake Tahoe, second only to Lake Tahoe as one of the most beautiful lakes in America. That was published out by Charlotte Stories. We're going to jump into the program. Again, no matter how you're joining us, whether it be early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT, or if you're joining us via podcast, Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, you can access that wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as at jessebrowns.com. Back with more after this. If you want to learn fly fishing, then pick a date and sign up for a wading trip from Jesse Brown's. Our experienced guides meet you streamside with everything provided for the day. Rod and reel? Check. Waiters and boots? Check. Flies and lunch? No, not together, but flies to fish with are included in a streamside lunch too. Let's learn to fly fish with Jesse Browns. The Carolina Outdoors is in session. Come on in. The listening is fine. Bill Barty, your host here. Hey, there is a fly fishing Hall of Fame that opened in the Catskills, New York, back in 1985. That place is recognized to many as the birthplace of modern fly fishing. However, right here where we live, the Southern Appalachians are also rich in fly fishing history, and there is a place that celebrates the people that have helped impact that history, and that place is in Bryson City, North Carolina. And we're going to learn a little bit about the Fly Fishing Museum of Southern Appalachia right now on the Carolina Outdoors. And by doing so, we're going to introduce Alan Baker from the board of the museum. Alan, welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's fantastic to have you, and you are one of the busiest people in fly fishing and conservation in that scene. You grew up in the Lenore area, fishing, hunting, playing in the woods. Then you went to work with Duke Energy, and along with that job came activity with reintroducing Trout Unlimited to the Charlotte area, working with RRTU and the NC Wildlife Federation. You've authored a bunch of books. But, Alan, what we want to talk to you about is this museum. Tell us about its start back in 2013, because you were the man who helped make it happen.
Well, we just weren't doing anything to remember old fly fishermen. When I grew up, I would get all these stories about Cap Wiese, and there was the Howell brothers in Brevard, and Mark Cathy and the Smokies that was, you know, he was written about in some of Jim Cassidy's books, and no one was doing anything, you might say, to preserve that and have it for the next generation. So long and short, I looked around to see who was going to do it, and it ended up being me.
Well, who better to grab hold of those reins and make it happen? I mentioned 2013. This is the 10th anniversary of the museum. But, Alan, we started out in a different place. It is in Bryson City now, but the very first one was in Cherokee. How did that happen and the move?
Well, that's correct. Well, when I was looking for a home, you know, basically you got to have a building to do a museum. And the Cherokee Nation, the tribe, stepped up and offered a building. They were very interested in the history of fly fishing. There are some roots in their heritage, and we started with a building there. But we ended up moving to Bryson City a year later, simply because of the logistics of things like signs. We ended up with waiting on a sign forever in Cherokee. They had interesting ordinances there. But we moved to Bryson City after 1 year.
Well, of course, now the museum has just moved, and we're talking about the Fly Fishing Museum of Southern Appalachians. It has moved. I think it's moved now. I think May 6th was the date where it moved, right alongside the Tuckasegee River and the Appalachian Rivers Aquarium right there in Bryson City. Tell us about this new location and what it's going to offer differently than the old location.
Well, the original agreement was to house aquariums and the museum together. And, of course, Bryson City at the time, they offered a building that we could put the museum in so we could move. But we needed to build a building for the aquariums. We went through that before COVID and finished the Appalachian Rivers Aquarium, and that's been operational, 3 or 4 years now. Yeah. And then last year they began construction on the building for the museum, and the old building we were in was an old bank building, and we just finished the move last weekend.
Well, hard work for our guest, Alan Baker, and the rest of the board making this happen, getting the exhibits in there and presented. And Alan, as we talk here on the Carolina Outdoors, I want to prepare you because here comes the hard part. The Fly Fishing Museum of Southern Appalachians, you know, providing a place of learning, a place of history, the arts, the sciences, the crafts, and the skills of fly fishing. But I want to ask you how, especially with your view over the years, how has the sport changed over those decades with what the museum is preserving with those things?
Well, you know, some of the earliest rods were greenheart wood. Mm-hmm. Bamboo pretty much dominated the sport 100, 150 years ago. And then we went through a period of metal rods and fiberglass. And, of course, graphite came along about the time I started fly fishing in the, 60s and 70s. And graphite has dominated until we've gotten to more recent years where there's a little retro effect now. There's, you know, bamboo and fiberglass being built again, particularly because of the qualities those rods have. All, you might say, high tech now because a lot of research has been done. And that's just the rods. The reels have pretty much been the same function, but the drag systems have improved greatly. Leaders and tippets, fluorocarbon has come along as a better tippet. Some things pretty much the same like flies, but we're more into synthetics. But the basic idea of fly fishing, you might say it's a primitive high-tech science. You go out there and you're more on a level playing field with a fish with a fly rod.
Well, I think you broke that down really well because, you know, to many listeners who are being introduced to the sport, and of course, the museum will help many people who aren't familiar with the sport be introduced to it. But fishing is fishing, but it has changed so much, including, you know, transportation. A drift boat was a part of the initial exhibit at one time. But even the way we fish, access and the way rivers are floated is different. But here's a big difference I want to ask you about, and we may circle back to access, but talk about the digital age, because you know, back when you might take a black and white Polaroid of that fish and bring it back to your buddies and show them what you caught, but these days we're 24/7, and whether it be Instagram, Facebook, or just a text, fly fishing and its promotion has become digital. How's the museum look at that or celebrate the old times compared with the fast-moving new times that are around?
Well, the one exhibit I think about the most is Cato Holler. Mm-hmm. He was a fisherman back in the mid-20th century, and his grandson has worked with me to preserve his legacy. And there's a video we play of him catching a fish there on the Armstrong Creek. And, you know, we play that video in a circle so people can relate to what happened. Actually, it's, 75, 80 years ago, I guess, when that happened. And we use video extensively through the museum and, you know, jump sticks, literally put into a TV, and you can recreate, you know, the floating down the river in a drift boat or tying a fly. We're looking now at the technology, the QR technology, so you can step up to a museum and hold your cell phone up, and more information comes on your cell phone about the exhibit.
Well, I may be out of turn on this, but I think Cato Holler is a member of the Hall of Fame that is also in place with the museum. And Alan, of course, with the accomplishments that you that I mentioned in your introduction, you were celebrated with your own introduction in the Hall of Fame. Talk to us about the Hall of Fame and the relationship with the mission of the museum. And I think Cato Holler is a member of the Hall of Fame, and I'll let you correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, actually, he is not. He is what we call a stream blazer. Most of the exhibits in the museum celebrate people of the past, and we call them stream blazers. The Hall of Fame, our first year, our first class was in 2016, but actually just a few weeks after we moved in and set up in Bryson City, we had that scheduled and proceeded with it, and we inducted four members that year. We do it by categories. We have conservation, communication, crafts, and recreation. That was the first four. Now, since then, we've evolved, and we have a humanities and an ambassador. And in 2019, I was one of the first to be put in as ambassador. And basically, it's a jack-of-all-trades type category for fly fishing.
Well, then it's fitting. It's fitting that you went in that way. We're talking about you can check all of this out, flyfishingmuseum.org, including of the Hall of Fame, and you can see our guest, Alan Baker, who did back in 2019 go in as an ambassador. And Alan, with that, I guess you're always taking, or the Hall of Fame is always taking nominees. So I guess to our listeners out there who know someone who is impactful with the sport of fly fishing, it doesn't have to be in the Southeast, though, does it? It just has to be impactful to the sport, or do they need to be located in the region?
They're on our website. We did expand the geographics to be all the Southeast, and that's like 17 states or something like that.
Gotcha.
And the reason for a limitation is because there are, a couple museums up north doing Hall of Fame, and, we're trying to reduce the overlap, you might say. But for this year, we inducted our first saltwater fly fisherman, Jake Jordan. And he lives in Havelock, but he probably has done much more of his fly fishing in Florida, for tarpon and so forth. So the Hall of Fame has evolved and changed to like Whitlock out west in yeah. Ozarks was the motivation for changing that. And now we're working on a project to do a Hall of Fame trail, which is, a new concept of, it's kind of like a greenway, but it educates whoever is going down the trail on the Hall of Fame of fly fishermen.
Oh, wow. Well, and I need to point out, besides Alan Baker, who is in our area, Jim Cassada in the Charlotte area, Rock Hill, South Carolina, is also a member inducted in 2016. Just the folks close to Charlotte, a shout out that way. And again, you can check all of this out at flyfishingmuseum.org. Alan, I need to ask you about this, about programming, exhibits. What will we see if we go up there this spring, this summer? What will be on hand for us if we pop in there? Because I know it's ever-changing, but as this was a brand-new museum or a brand-new location, what are the exhibits existing right now?
We have over 150 exhibits. The drift boat is still there. We've expanded the panels to discuss each of the first four guides that use drift boats in the Southeast. We have Cato Holler in his full attire. We have a Hollywood mannequin that wears the gear. Fly Tying Bench. We had to compress some of the exhibits to make more space, but it's all there as it was. We've added about 20 exhibits when we moved. Yes. For example, we have an exhibit on presidents, past presidents in the United States that fly fished. My favorite's Calvin Coolidge that fished out in the Black Hills. And I went out there a couple of years ago and fished the Black Hills, and it's amazing. And there was never a trout there originally. Ah. They're all transplanted into the limestone streams of the Black Hills. So you got like a president's exhibit. The oldest flies that we're aware of, we have replicas of the Macedonian fly that was tied around 200 BC. The reason we know that, it is documented in Roman literature. And no one really knew what it looked like. So we have this artist that created four different versions of it, and we have that on display. We have a display of the original burner flies, the 12 flies that were used in the late 1400s. And we have the Isaac Walton flies from the book from the late 1600s. So we have reached back and tried to replicate those things, because in some ways there's no one around that knows exactly how they looked, and all you have in some cases is just sketches.
Wow, all on hand, brand new museum, Bryson City, a brand new 10-year-old museum, I should say. The new location just opened up. Board member of the Fly Fishing Museum, Alan Baker. Thank you. Oh, and Alan, don't let me get in trouble. Joyce Shepherd, that's another Charlotte area lady.
Absolutely.
In the Hall of Fame. Yeah. Yep. So
Joyce was with us last weekend when we did the inductions.
She went in 2018. Yes. So yep. Mm-hmm. All of this is on hand in Bryson City. We can go flyfishingmuseum.org to learn more, to find out where to be, how to be. Alan, I know you're heading out fishing, but thank you for taking the time to jump on the Carolina Outdoors with us.
Well, I hope people enjoy it. We've worked hard the last few years to make sure we have our own museum in the South, and it's just, 3.5 hours from Charlotte.
Oh, easy, and what a beautiful place that it is, too. So kudos to you for picking that location out, because the banks of the Tuckasegee in Bryson City, right at the next door to the entranceway of the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, couldn't be finer.
And back 70 years ago, people were making a living tying flies right there in Bryson City. It has a lot of history. Yep.
We can learn more. Go catch some fish, Alan Baker, and thank you for being on with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And again, if you're listening, flyfishingmuseum.org, go check it out. However you may be listening to the Carolina Outdoors, whether it be early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT Radio or highlights of the Carolina Outdoors via podcast, I'm Bill Barty. We're going to take a quick break, flip over on the other side, and continue the conversation. We want to see you. How about at Jesse Brown's Outdoors Facebook page, maybe Instagram? Both operate under the handle Jesse Brown CLT, and we want to see your hike, hunt, fish, climb, travel picks. We love to share and hope that you do too. Plus, giveaways, discounts, and celebrating our friends is a part of the charm. Again, Facebook and Instagram at Jesse Brown's CLT. Wake up if you're listening early on a Saturday morning via the airwaves of WBT Radio, and move it on into the outdoors here on the Carolina Outdoors. Your host, Bill Barty. Listen, for over 35 years, Fix It Man has held court in Damascus, Virginia, the week after Mother's Day, to help AT thru-hikers patch, fix, and encourage their gear to continue the trek through Virginia and northward towards the trail's terminus in Maine. He's seen outdoor equipment change from heavier canvases and steel frames on packs to lightweight nylons and carbon fibers. And we're going to learn about it right now as we bring Alan Morton onto the Carolina Outdoors to talk about Appalachian Trail Days. Alan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Always look forward to this.
Well, it's one of our highlights here on the program, too, is many of the through hikers, northbound and southbound, of course, are out there on the trail. I guess the northbound hikers are 500 or so miles in from the beginning there down in Georgia. Alan, I mentioned heavier canvases and steel frames, but footwear as well. Man, those things used to be 4-pound heavy leather hiking boots made to last 2,200 miles. Now they're synthetic, lightweight footwear. They change them every 500 miles. Talk to us about you and being Fix-It Man with 20,000 of your closest friends there in Damascus during Trail Days, May 19 through 21. What's it like?
It's an unreal hikers reunion party, parade, skits and live shows, live music. And of course, the area that I run every year as a committee chairperson for them is the Complete Repair Center, where we work on any brand, any product to try to get it back on trail and send them either northbound to Katahdin or southbound to Springer Mountain, whichever direction they're going in.
Well, in my imagination, it's kind of like an auto mechanic back in 1978, popping the hood and going to work on the engine of a car. But if you pop open the hood of a 2023 automobile, it's entirely different. How is it with the equipment for you? Is that make it how has it changed from back when you started to now in relation to solving the problems that they have?
Thank you. There's so many significant differences. And my daughter's shop, Mountain Crossings, down in Georgia, has got prime examples hanging all over the walls and hanging from the rafters of old canvas packs.
Yes.
Up through the heavy-duty newer nylon packs to some of the new featherweight, lightweight packs.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite different from, well, like you said, 35 plus years. This is the 36th annual Trail Days. I've actually been there for 38 years doing it because it's been going on 2 years longer than it's been called Appalachian Trail Days. Today's fabrics are real slippery because they're coated with silicone and other waterproof coatings. And so they're a little bit harder to handle these things in a sewing machine or just in general than the old canvas and the old heavy ripstop nylons and such. And today, you're right, we got carbon fiber tent poles. We got high-quality aluminum tent poles. But we still have to repair fiberglass ones, and we can't repair those in the field. They're
yes.
impossible to fix. So part of our job is explaining to people to go to a shop and look for a better tent that's got better materials in it. And the shoes, oh, wow. You're right about that, too. Heavy shoes have gone lighter weight. They're all running shoes now. And a lot of these folks don't understand how come they only last 450 miles. And so today I have to explain to them from the foundation up with footwear, you're looking at 450 miles or about 20% of the trail. That takes you about five pairs of low-cut running shoes. And so it's an investment you've got to be prepared for.
Well said, and who better to talk about it than Alan Morton. Of course, Eastern Outdoor Sales equipment is definitely different. You've been in the outdoor biz for a long time representing equipment, footwear, and gear with Eastern Outdoor Sales. Although you're headquartered in Boone, you travel the entire Southeast representing iconic brands, two of which I know you're going to have. Well, you've got so many, but let's hone in on Big Agnes and Crazy Creek.
Yeah.
And as we talk about that, because, Alan, I think you have a couple of games that you, not only when you're not running the sewing machine and patching people's equipment, you help sponsor a couple of the more popular games or raffles for people, like stuffing a sleeping bag or musical chairs using Crazy Creek. What do you have in store for 2023 over at the Fix-It Man booth?
Well, thanks for asking for that again. The entire time, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we've got Guess the Pack Weight contest sponsored by Big Agnes, because, of course, now we've got a full lineup of backpacks. And so people will come by, and they'll pick it up and put it on and make their guess and write it down on our clipboard. And on Saturday afternoon, we're going to award somebody a real nice, brand-new Big Agnes backpack. And along with that, this year, they sent me extra packs so that we can swap out with some thru-hikers, at least one woman and a couple of men, to do some field testing in the field on the trail for us and give us feedback. And then the other deal we're doing, of course, is Crazy Creek.
Yes.
Everybody loves that, and they're saying, You know, at Big Agnes, we just say, go sleep in the dirt. But at Crazy Creek, we say, don't just do something, sit there. So we're sitting in our Crazy Creek chairs with musical chairs where we start out with 11 people. And just like you did when you were a kid, we play music and they go around in a circle. And when I stop the music, you all scramble to grab the chairs. And it is a hilarious scene to watch all these thru-hikers do this.
It's just a couple of the many different events that are going on at Appalachian Trail Days in Damascus, Virginia. Again, the dates are May 19th through the 21st, 2023. Our guest, as he is every year, is Fix-It Man, Alan Morton, joining us here on the program so that we can learn a little bit more about it. And, of course, Alan, as you mentioned, it's been going on for so many years, but the trail community has grown over the decades. They do expect 20,000 people plus in 2023. You've had this view of it, not just the equipment, but you've had the people view as well. Talk to us about the group of people, because you have people who are attempting to thru-hike this year. You have reunions for those that have hiked it in the past. You have thousands of AT volunteers and supporters that show up for trail days. And then you just have trail fans and the trail community that all come on board. What about that? Has it gotten just massive and almost unmanageable, or is it still that tight-knit, friendly trail community that it started as?
Well, I think that the trail community itself, Bill, is still a tight-knit group of people. I mean, the saying's always been, a group of people can sit down and have lunch, and within an hour, everybody up and down the trail is going to know what you had. It's that close-knit of a group of kids, and from adults to little children. I know this year there's a whole family with a mom and a dad and their children out there. We've seen that several times over the years, and that is really cool to see a whole family doing it. But it's primarily based on individuals, men and women out there, just having, you know, the best time of their lives to get away from everyday life and their jobs and school. And the tight-knitness of it at Trail Days, the community of Damascus, Virginia, they have got this. I mean, they got this down so good and so tight. It is so well organized. Tuesday Pope, the town clerk, keeps everything smoothly running. Susan Coleman, who is the head chairperson this year, she keeps everybody going really smooth, and everyone takes turns from directing traffic to folding T-shirts to manning booths. When my sidekick, Rob DePue, and I show up next Tuesday, first thing we have to do is spray paint lines in the parking lot and get things ready for all the booths getting set up. So we're on the ground running from Tuesday until next Sunday morning. And then we drive out real early to drive to Colorado to our Big Agnes sales meeting.
So a man on the move is Alan Morton, our guest here on the program. And, Alan, you mentioned families. I think one of the groups that are speaking is a family, the Sutton family. And they thru-hiked, and they're going to be presenting over at the Rock School Auditorium there. They call it a feel-good story. Back in 2021, of course, the pandemic was in full bloom, and the Sutton family walked the entire way with their 4-year-old son, trail name Little Man. They started in January and took them 209 days on their family hike to reach Mount Katahdin in Maine. They're going to be talking a little bit about what they learned along that hike, especially with a 4-year-old who turned 5 along the way, and transpose that with the new Damascus Trail Center. That's a newer center that they have in town. Have you been over there to check it out or see anything in it?
Indeed, I have. In fact, I've been very involved with that, with the ATC and that new conference center. I was there for the grand opening at the end of August and back in 22. We had several dignitaries from state politics out of Richmond and in the district in Washington County. The Southwest District sent a lot of representatives. We had friends from the Forestry Service, the Park Service, local law enforcement, the mayor's group in Damascus, and an incredible number of ATC members and thru-hikers. So it was a really good event when they did their grand opening, and everyone is very proud to have that new center over in Damascus.
Yeah, they've got workshops, contests, games, all of that on hand right there at the Damascus Trail Center. Of course, you're going to head over there to where Alan Morton will be holding court, register for his games, participate in his games. And you can check this all out at visitdamascus.org. We're going to put it up in the liner notes, highlights of the Carolina Outdoors as well, so that you can see where you need to be. Again, this May 19th, 20th, and 21st at Appalachian Trail Days. Again, visitdamascus.org. Alan Morton, what did I miss? Anything that I left out that we need to know about?
Oh, gosh, yes. All the local churches in town, they've got spaghetti dinners and pancake breakfasts and, I mean, food galore. There's even a new whiskey distillery on Main Street in Damascus now.
Oh, do tell.
I mean, that little town has just really sprouted out, and lots of new things going on, lots of wonderful little Airbnbs in town, just a wonderful group of people in that community that have an incredible spirit for all the thru-hikers every year.
Hey, Alan, what's the wildest thing that you have seen that you can tell on the radio anyway? It could be regarding equipment. It can be regarding a human interest story. But what's the – because I know, I mean, over – 3 decades plus, almost 40 years almost, for such a young man. Tell us some of the wildest stories that you can tell about Trail Days in regards to equipment, stories, or people.
Well, Baltimore Jack is a famous old person along the trail. God bless him, rest in peace now. Mm-hmm. But one year he walked in the parade with a billy goat, and he was hilarious. The Blue Blazers, hobo hikers have always got funny things going on at Trail Days every year. And they're a group to get together, with all the thru hikers. We had one guy walk one year in the parade with the Jethro Bodine backpack made out of a cardboard box and duct tape. But we've seen, and there was a gentleman, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago who was walking across America, and he stopped to walk the AT north and south and then went west to California. And he was toting a handmade steel frame cart with one bicycle wheel on it. And he had a cooler, a backpack. He had like 300 pounds on this thing, Bill, and had his own homemade harness. But he was trucking around like I've never seen. We have seen backpacks and tents from all over the world, brands you've never seen or heard of. And it's true. The technology has gotten better and better and better. And it's just, it's something I encourage all people. If you really want to know what's going on with lightweight backpacking today, come to Trail Days in Damascus, Virginia next week. And I guarantee you, you will see it all.
It is something to see, and it is family friendly as well. You know, we've had scout troops have come on who are visiting, camping overnight during Trail Days, during the celebration. Alan, I wanted to ask you this. Of course, Bill Bryson wrote the famous book about hiking the Appalachian Trail, A Walk in the Woods. Any movie star sightings? Robert Redford turned that into a feature film. Ever seen Robert Redford show up at Appalachian Trail Days?
No, neither him nor Nick Nolte have shown up there.
Wow.
Part of that movie was actually filmed at my daughter's store, Mountain Crossings, down in Georgia. She's even in it, and she makes cameo appearances at Trail Days. I think she and her boyfriend are planning on coming this year.
Well, maybe they can talk Nick and Robert to show up. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Maybe someday one of those characters would show up, but I would encourage anybody to watch that movie, too, because that's one of the most hilarious trail movies I've ever seen.
It is too good, and so are you, Alan Morton. Thank you always for sharing your knowledge, your time with us here on the Carolina Outdoors and the listeners, and we hope to see you there May 19th through the 21st. We're going to be in Damascus, Virginia for Trail Days.
I will say this, Bill. you back it up one day because it actually is open to all the thru-hikers starting on Thursday the 18th. And by Sunday morning, the 21st, they're all gone. They're back on the trail again. And that's why we're packing up early on Sunday morning and peeling out of town to head to Colorado.
So it's appropriate to show up early. And if they show up Tuesday, they can help you and Rob unpack.
Post that schedule I sent you. And I look forward to doing our live gig while we're at Trail Days next week. And maybe you'll have other questions, or we might have some fun things we can share with you then.
You've got it, Alan. Thank you for jumping on with us.
You got it, brother. And happy hiking, and go sleep in the dirt.
Go sleep in the dirt. You can check it all out again, as he said in the liner notes. Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, wherever you listen to your podcast. I'm Bill Barty. This is the Carolina Outdoors. Graduation is in the air, and Jesse Brown's has what your graduate needs for the future. Hi everyone, Bill Barty here from the Carolina Outdoors, saying that hot gifts at Jesse Brown's include Yeti mugs engraved with their name or monogram, a travel kit from Filson or Fish Pond, and duffels from the North Face and Patagonia all celebrate that student that's moving into the future. Help them celebrate with a gift from Jesse Brown's. Shop at jessebrowns.com, or better yet, visit us in the brick and mortar in the shopping district of the Charlotte region, South Park. Get ready. The South Carolina DNR Black Bass Slam celebrates the black bass diversity throughout South Carolina while promoting angling opportunities across the state. So how do anglers participate? They're trying to get you to seek out new fishing spots and target species that may have never been caught, introducing new habitats to anglers while promoting education and conservation of our black bass species. So get out there, enjoy the state of South Carolina's outdoor resources, and go after a slam. So what is a slam? Anglers must catch all four black bass species to complete the SCDNR Black Bass Slam. That is a largemouth bass, a smallmouth bass, a red-eye bass, and a spotted bass. You can go to SC Bass Slam at dnr.sc.gov to submit your catch. What you need is a photo of the fish from the side for identification purposes and a photo of themselves with the fish. Each submission must include date of catch, location, angler contact information, and your fishing license number. That's a very important part because you need that fishing license. So what's the reward for catching the all four species of black bass? The reward is, for all anglers that do have success with this, they can get a personalized certificate from the state, four unique stickers corresponding to each black bass species, and a SCDNR Bass Slam patch. Again, you can do all this by going over to dnr.sc.gov. Go to that website to participate. Check out the rules for entry and how to submit, and we'll put that in the liner notes here on the Carolina Outdoors. Hey, on this edition, of course, you heard us talk to Fix It Man, Alan Morton. He's talking about Trail Days USA in Trail Town, Damascus, Virginia. Jumped on here and talked to us about how equipment has changed over the year, the heavier canvas and steel frames on backpacks to these days, the lightweight synthetics, the nylons, along with the carbon frames. He kind of clued us in on that, but he also clued us in on the celebration that the festival brings to us. Again, you can visit damascus.org for more information, or just check it out in the liner notes of highlights of the Carolina Outdoors. Also, special thanks to Alan Baker for joining us and sharing some information on the Fly Fishing Museum in Bryson City. Want to get that right? You can check out flyfishingmuseum.org for more information on that. And again, as always, thank you to them, and thank you to you For TJ the DJ Boggs, I'm Bill Bartee saying make the Carolina outdoors look a little bit better than you found it, and pick up your trash.